This edition of Commodity Week was recorded Friday, January the 16th, 2009. USDA did it again. The agency delivered a January surprise to the marketplace. This year, it wasn't so bullish. We'll talk about that and much more today on Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Later this half hour, we'll talk with Purdue Extension ag economist Chris Hurt. Our panelists in studio today are Chuck Shelby of Risk Management Commodities out of Lafayette, Indiana, Tom Mann of Strategic Farm Marketing from Champaign, Illinois, and Dale Durkles of AgroVisor out of Bloomington, Illinois. In Chicago this week, futures finished like this. The nearby March wheat contract is 637.5 top for the soft red, the low at 560.5, settlement price down 51.25 cents at $5.78.25. July soft red winter wheat, 602.25, finished 51 cents lower week over week. Corn futures, March contract a 415 high this week, a low at 358.75, settlement price down 19.75 at $3.91 a bushel. And December, 436.75, finished 17.5 cents lower. March soybean futures, $10.60.25 the high, the low at 957.75. The March is the new lead option in Chicago. From week to week, there was a 17.5 cent change, and it settled at $10.20. The March to March contract down 16. November soybeans at $9.72 finished 57.5 cents lower. CME Group livestock, live cattle futures, February contract a high this week of 85.15, a low at 82.25, settled up a buck 42.5 at 84.52.5. The January feeders at $95 were up 90 cents on the week. And the February lean hogs had a top this week at $62.70, a bottom at $59.10, the settlement price down $2.50 at $59.95. Commodity Week is a production of Public Radio on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. Our panelists today in studio are Chuck Shelby, Tom Mann, and Dale Durkles.
Commodity Week is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at AgriGold.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
Let's open today's discussion with this question. It's certain, Dale Durkles, that USDA changed the fundamental picture for the grains and the oil seeds. How much impact do you think this change will have over the long term?
Really not a lot, because the one thing you still have to put into the mix in here, unless we get acres in corn next year, I think you're still going to look at a diminishing supply prospect. And when you look at the oil seeds at this particular point, things that are undergoing in South America in terms of weather right now can more than offset some of the things we saw in this report from USDA.
Chuck Shelby?
I think it complicates matters for farmers as far as the corn numbers. Kind of a big shift there in the carryout, a big loss of exports and demand. So farmers got a lot of decisions ahead on the 09 planting process.
And Tom Mann.
Well, you got to look at reduced headcount on animals, the ethanol industry's debacle, and world economy and the dollar value. And to me, I don't know. I just don't see the supply going away. I think we're going to have a huge carryout.
Recapping some of those numbers from the USDA and the crop production, they raised corn and soybean production. Now corn at 12.101 billion bushels for the 2008 year. Soybeans at 2.959. They also raised the average yield. But they managed to do a couple of different things with the ending stocks. USDA's corn number now at 1.79 billion bushels for ending stocks. That's compared to 1.474 in the December estimate and 225 million bushel carryout for the soybeans as compared to 205 million earlier in the year in December. So, Chuck, tell me, when you take a look at those numbers, did it change the way you viewed the marketplace that day entirely? I mean, did you have to recalculate everything you were doing, or did it give you a sense that you had done things right to this point?
Oh, I think it changed things from perspective of more 09 and on 08. We'd done fairly good job of moving the crop out as far as corn goes, but the bottom line at that number, and I think the perception of the market and the trade might be that the carryout can go at least to maybe to 2 billion bushel, because the demand, I think, at this point would be perceived to be smaller and smaller, and the ethanol industry is in the process of trying to get reorganized, but certainly with crude oil down where it is and a lot of these ethanol plants in bankruptcy that need to get tooled back up, until the demand is shown to be coming back in the positive side, I think it's a struggle for corn.
What were the other numbers that you took a look at on that day, Dale? For instance, winter wheat seedings went from last year at 46.181 million acres down to 42.098.
One interesting statistic in regard to that: for the 12th consecutive year, winter wheat seedings have come in below trade expectations. It's notorious for being a bullish report. Don't know why. Other than the corn numbers there, you know, and basically those were the big changes when they looked at the demand. I don't think the supply was really as significant as anything else. But one thing I'm also cognizant of when you look at this, at some point, you know, when you're especially when you have a market in transition at some point, the USDA tends to lag in terms of picking up changes that are going on. And right now, yeah, I can justify why they put out the numbers they did, but I think we've got to be a little bit careful here, especially on the export side of the equation, that, you know, they may be getting a little bit overly pessimistic at this juncture.
So what was the number that you thought was pessimistic when they brought the exports out? What did you see there that really bothered you?
You know, the difficult thing about corn exports right now is that, yeah, it's lagging all indicators at this point. But the big reason corn exports are lagging, yeah, we can talk about demand around the world, but it's been this competition from feed wheat. And feed wheat, by and large, we should have already moved through the system pretty well at this particular point. We shouldn't be depending upon that. I really think part of the game going on in a corn export market, people don't have this perception out there, the end users, the buyers I'm speaking of really stepping up to the plate, starting to buy things a little bit more aggressively, because they're still playing with this mental psychological image of corn being tied to ethanol and tied back to crude oil itself. And crude oil staying soft as it is basically leaving this perception that the ethanol industry is going to continue at a very subdued pace for maybe a longer period of time than what we might see. And so they feel that there's really no need to step up to the plate and get very aggressive. But I think if you had ever seen some kind of an indication that energy prices have bottomed, I think the buyers out there in the world would step up and get more aggressive in the export sector.
Tom, man, you think that's the case, that if we watch energy prices and they begin to spike, that things will return quickly?
I do, and that is one of the things that we've really been tracking in the office is basically the dollar versus crude versus commodities, say, like corn and soybeans. And up until about the last week, they've been tracking very well. As the dollar rises, crude goes down, and along with commodities. Is that going to continue? I don't know. We saw a little divorcing of that issue here, you know, in the last four or five trading days, and I don't know whether that's going to continue or not. But at any rate, we also have some other issues that we have to consider right now, and these sub-zero temperatures and what it's going to do to wheat acres in the south. Are those wheat acres going to get destroyed? I talked to a client today that went down through Kentucky and Tennessee, and he said they were a mess. So where do those acres end up?
Well, what's your thought there? Because the south will have not only if that's a problem, the south will not only have those acres, but for instance, if USDA is correct on their numbers for soft red winter wheat acres and the drop, there are a huge number of acres in Arkansas and other places that need to go into another crop unless they lay fallow, and I would think that probably won't be the case.
I think they're probably going to go into soybeans most likely. There'll probably be some going to cotton and some of the minor crops, but as a whole, I think the majority of it, unless the economics changes, will go to soybeans.
You want to always remember when you get into what I'll call the Mid-South, but we can start about southern Indiana, southern Illinois, down into the Mid-South area. You know, acreage changes don't happen one-to-one between wheat and other crops because you have, by and large, a large area down here that double crops of beans behind wheat. So if they rip the wheat up, do they go back to corn with it, or do they plant soybeans? And that soybeans may be a single-season crop, whereas they may have been a double-crop bean anyway. So you don't get this one-to-one acreage change-off if, in fact, you know, wheat gets ripped up.
You know, Chuck, Darryl Good this week when we were out on the Corn and Soybean Classics was talking to the producers about the number of extra acres that had come into the marketplace since 2006. I think something between 8 and 9 million acres, and then you drop wheat seedings by 4.2 million acres this year. And his suggestion was that we really don't need the extra acres, that 8 or 9 at all, to keep things in balance fundamentally, according to the USDA numbers. What happens to all those acres?
Well, they're going to be planted, Todd. I think you ought to lost a lot in hay and cattle numbers are down. And so those acres are going to be planted. I think at this point in time, with the rally in the bean market and the price of beans, it's still a price where producers can make money. So I think they're going to be attracted to that. What happened to the wheat acres? We saw the price go down at the time when that wheat should be planted. So there was a natural tendency to lay off the wheat. That may happen to corn in the long run. To us, that may be one of the best or most positive features of corn. If the acres go down enough and we retool the demand in ethanol, corn may have its day. But I think certainly right now those acres are going to be headed towards soybeans.
Tom, did you find in the soybean market week over week the change in the spread fairly interesting from the nearby to the new crop?
Well, I mean, spreads are always interesting, but, you know, I guess I don't even know what to say about that fact. Spreads just are all over the place, and it's just like right now. I don't know what to say. Somebody else is going to have to address that one.
You know, well, it's, you know, the old crop beans have been strong. The new crop have been weak, you know, and it's probably a little bit of a perception in here because we keep getting bombarded with things that, you know, we're going to have acres. But I really think that it's really a case of the old crop months being strong because of the weather and Argentina in particular, and even in Brazil, because we're starting to get indications that Brazil's soybean crop is falling short of expectation in a few different areas, enough to take production out there. So I don't think it's so much the spread change or reflection of new crop as it is for old crop and the potential we're going to shift some added demand back here into the U.S. And that can even come true in the product market, which I think is important because crush margins have been poor. But Argentina in particular is an exporter of soybean products. So if their crop tends to fall short of expectations, we could actually see the export market for products get a little bit of life and actually can end up giving the crush market here in the U.S. A boost in demand, as well as seeing soybean exports themselves getting boosted.
Tom, I'll bet the weather in Argentina is something you have been following.
Right. South America as a whole has been pretty crappy. It's been really dry in areas, and essentially, we're seeing, it was like a 5 million metric ton reduction in the Brazilian crop in soybeans, and about 2.5 million metric tons in Argentina. And, you know, if you listen to independent people that are down there that are looking at this condition, they're saying that if this thing doesn't get a little rain, it can only get worse, and all rain's really going to do for it is level it out.
One of the questions that a producer asked Darryl Good this week was if he thought a good average for corn might be $4.50 and $10 for soybeans. Maybe we can ask everybody here if they think that will be the case for the new crop year.
New crop year? I think it will do a little better than that.
I think the corn number might be high. The bean number is probably in line with our thinking.
I agree with that. I think we're going to see, we could see $2 number in front of corn and soybeans, 10. Yeah, that's okay.
And then if you take a further look deep into that next year, what kinds of changes do you think USDA might make in the coming year, or fundamentally how could things change to move you into a different direction? So if the economy fails, what are the stumbling blocks?
Well, they're by the hundreds. I mean, you know, it's going to be basically the affordability of the crops. And what's the USDA going to do? Are we going to go back to some of the set-aside years and pick and stuff like that? What will happen is we'll have to reduce production just to support the price.
Dale, a final word from you before we go to the break?
One thing I think people need to keep an eye on is what goes on in China. Already we're hearing about problems with their wheat crop, and that's really significant because their wheat crop is like our corn crop to world production. They're about 16-17%, and we're having some difficulty over there, pretty widespread.
You're listening to the January 16th edition of Commodity Week.
I'm Steve Hilberg with the NOAA Midwestern Regional Climate Center, located at the Illinois State Water Survey in Champaign. The coldest weather in 10 winters plunged through the Midwest this week, accompanied by more snow for northern and central Illinois. Temperatures this week were below normal to start with, but the bottom fell out on Wednesday as Arctic air poured into Illinois behind the departure of an Alberta clipper. By Thursday morning, temperatures had plummeted to the mid-20s below zero in snow-covered northern Illinois and to between 0 and 5 above in the far south. The mercury did not rise much during the day either. At the Aurora Airport in Kane County, the temperature dropped to 24 below zero Thursday morning and by mid-afternoon had only risen to 13 below zero. Snowfall has been frequent and plentiful across northern Illinois for a week or more, and the snow is 8 to 13 inches deep across most of northern Illinois north of I-80. Snow cover is less as you head further south, with 3 to 6 inches along and north of I-74, down to only a trace by the time you reach I-70. It looks like temperatures will gradually return to near normal the first half of next week. Some precipitation is possible on Tuesday as another clipper system moves through the Great Lakes, but precipitation should be light. While no big warm-up is in the picture, it does appear temperatures should be near normal. At this time of year, that is highs in the mid-20s north to mid-30s south and lows in the teens to low 20s. For the NOAA Midwestern Regional Climate Center in Champaign, I'm Steve Hilberg.
Commodity Week is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at AgriGold.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
Commodity Week is a production of Public Radio on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. Our panelists in studio today are Chuck Shelby, Tom Mann, and Dale Durkles. Our guest on the phone line is from Purdue. He's Extension Ag Economist Chris Hurt. Good afternoon to you, Chris.
Well, hello, Todd.
Well, how do you view the livestock situation in the United States at this point?
Well, obviously, we are experiencing the economic downturn there, just like on the grain side. I think that's really the erosion of demand and the concern we have, particularly for the beef sector, and then it looks like the milk sector, dairy sector also. Generally, the higher price the product that the animal product is sold, that high price steak, that's what's in the most trouble, or say some of the more expensive cheeses or premium ice creams. Shoppers are looking for a way to save a buck, and those higher cost items are a way to do that, whether it's in the grocery store or whether it's in terms of the restaurant trade.
Chris, this is Dale, and that brings up an interesting perception I have. You know, it seems like over the last number of years, chicken has become no longer the cheap meat out there. in the industry at this point. And if we have people a little bit economically concerned about what lies ahead and maybe eat at home a little bit more, do you think that's going to maybe give some residual benefit to the pork industry at this point compared to what we might otherwise see?
Well, we've actually thought that probably would be the case, that pork is a variety meat. It's a lower-priced meat overall in the grocery store and even on some menu items. And particularly as people still want meat in their diet, we think there will be some shifting substitution of that higher-priced beef and moving over to other products, and we think pork is certainly one of those. Obviously, on the chicken side, we had very low-cost chicken for a long time with whole chickens, but there's not many whole chickens sold anymore. We're buying very highly processed meats, deboned, and those chicken products really aren't that cheap anymore.
Chris, when you look at the bigger corn carryout, do you perceive that will lower the corn price over time and help the livestock producer out, or what's your take on that number?
Yeah, and I think, you know, obviously the livestock producers are about like every other segment of the economy, just trying to get through this. They've lost a lot of money in general, depending on the species, and I think they're just very status quo. They'd like to see a run on some profits. We may see a little bit of that in hogs in the middle part of the year. Cattle looks like continued struggle. Obviously, the dairy sector has already expanded some, and that's really going to come back to hurt them. And in general, I think poultry is just kind of hanging on financially. So I think we do have to be very concerned about that demand side on corn. You know, you've talked about the demand for ethanol. As long as we keep energy, you know, $50, $60 on crude or less, we're just not going to sell very much ethanol as higher blends like E85. And that suggests we could still ratchet down somewhat there on the ethanol, corn use for ethanol. So I think that continues to be the case. You've already talked about plenty of acres for next year. And so, you know, are we returning to a period of somewhat more surplus? And what is the demand structure out in the world? When are we going to get back to selling more? We've got a lot of uncertainties to go through this year, but I think everybody knows that.
Chris, this is a little off the subject, but it's livestock byproduct, and I'm not very good with livestock anyway, but I had one of my clients today ask me about applying hog manure to his field at a constant rate, at the rate of 3,000 to 4,000 gallons per acre, and what kind of value that had to him, because he has a neighbor that has hogs, and they're trying to work some kind of a deal. And I didn't know how to answer the question. I'm asking for a little help from you.
Well, sure. There, I think our universities, University of Illinois or Purdue, either one, would have some calculators, so just contact the Extension office. Clearly, the price of commercial fertilizer has come down, but still is high by historical standards. So that certainly has value. It has value more than just the transportation cost. Prior to 3 years ago, we used to think that was just fairly close to the cost of picking it up and applying it. But today, with higher fertilizer prices, it's certainly worth more than that. And probably that grain producer can pay something to the hog producer. But I'd say check with the Cooperative Extension Service, and they should be able to give you some guidelines and obviously start with analysis.
Yeah, certainly here in on this campus you can contact Fabian Fernandez. He's the soil fertility and plant nutritionist specialist based in crop sciences, and that's pretty easy to do. Call 217-333-1000. That during the daytime hours, regular business hours, is the number for the university, and just ask for Fabian Fernandez. They'll connect you. You're listening to Commodity Week from the University of Illinois on the Urbana-Champaign campus. Our guest is Chris Hurt. He is Purdue Extension Ag Economist. We'll continue our conversation now. Chris, tell me how you viewed those numbers Monday morning from USDA.
Well, obviously, I think the corn was just the major surprise in terms of the erosion of utilization in virtually every category, and especially when we look at the possibility that we may use somewhat less for ethanol also. I guess my perception is we will see exports reach the level they have now, or maybe do a little bit better. But those are large numbers, and I think corn is in a real struggle at this point to convince producers to keep those corn acreage numbers higher. One of the difficulties we continue to see is fertilizer prices. We know wholesale, some world prices, indexes certainly have come down on fertilizer, but there's a lot of fertilizer in inventory, and those have been very sticky and coming down. And so there's a lot of waiting here to see if we can get fertilizer prices down and maybe some of the other costs to make corn more competitive. You know, at this point, I've got heavy movement to beans, maybe 6 million or so more acres of soybeans right now. And I think the corn market needs to come back a little bit to try to convince us to get those, get some corn. So, again, I'm looking at overall, next year, without weather problems, we just don't have supply tightness really in any of these crops. And I think we can say that unless we can really get the demand rolling again. And we all know that that's an undetermined amount of time, but we're certainly hopeful with this 09 crop as we get into the 2010 calendar year that we're going to see the start of recovery of some of the demand.
You know, Chris, it's interesting. As I listen to a lot of people talk here over the last number of months, you hear people want to reach out and talk about 2008 and then some comparisons maybe even back to 1996 and what I call a one-and-done type scenario. You know, you have a big flash one year and then you're done for a while. Do you think this really follows that character, or maybe a character of a market like what we had back in the 1970s, where we just had a lot more extreme volatility, and yet there was opportunities at different times along the way in the 70s?
Well, again, I think the fundamental changes clearly are the biofuels and the demand of these grains for biofuels. That's a fundamental change that we have had in the past 3 to 4 years. The second is the growth of the Asian demand, particularly the Chinese and some Indian demand, and I think those will probably come back. So I think that does, again, give us the sense that we get the world economy back on track. We're going to have some recovery, but I think it's still subject to question of what do we recover to, what kind of price levels. Again, Todd threw out the $4 and the $10 on soybeans, and I don't think those are unreasonable kinds of numbers. But what if those numbers are $3.50 and $9 or $3.50 and $8.50? Again, we've got to get our cost back into alignment with these prices, and that's the struggle I think producers are trying to work through here in 2009.
Chris, thanks for joining us today.
My pleasure.
Chris Hurd, Extension Ag Economist from Purdue University, joining us from their Lafayette, Indiana campus. You're listening to Commodity Week from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. Time now for a final word from our panelist in studio, Dale Durkles of AgriVisor.
I'll go back to something I mentioned earlier about China. They had 5 consecutive larger crops in a row in recent years, and they had 3 records consecutive records the last 3 years, and we're already seeing some weather problems. Keep an eye on what goes on over there this winter and spring.
Chuck Shelby of Risk Management Commodities.
I think farmers need to look at the crop they're growing, and when they can sell it for a profit this year, I think they need to take advantage of that.
And Tom Mann of Strategic Farm Marketing.
Well, he just stole my thunder there, because that's what I was going to say, but I would reiterate that especially right now when you can see beans over $10, you need to be selling those in particular.
This has been the January 16th edition of Commodity Week. Be sure to visit our website if you'd like at willag.org. That's willag.org. There you can hear this program and other agricultural programming anytime you'd like. I'm Todd Gleason.